The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Live from Philadelphia, you're listening to Faith with Pastor Mark. I'm Pastor Mark Salvation. I am the pastor and licensed local pastor at historic St. George's United Methodist Church here in Old City, Philadelphia. And for the last couple of weeks on Faith to Faith, we've been talking about the Special General Conference of the United Methodist Church, which recently concluded in St. Louis, Missouri. And today, for as our guest, we are honored to have Judy Enninger. Judy is a delegate, or was a delegate, to the Special General Conference in St. Louis. And Judy is a very, very long-time United Methodist. She is a lay person. But Judy plays a lot of roles in the annual conference. And this past week, Judy was a delegate to the St. Louis Special General Conference of the United Methodist Church. So, Judy, are you on the line?
I am.
Judy,
and I'm happy to be here, Mark.
Great to see you, and so happy that you're able to join us today on the show, Judy. One of the things we like to do with our guests at the beginning of the show is to identify their social location. So I mentioned, Judy, that you're a very active United Methodist and you're a layperson. Can you tell us some of the jobs and some of the responsibilities that you have with the annual conference here in Eastern Pennsylvania?
Well, I'd be delighted. I am currently involved with the Christ Servant Ministry Program and the Certified Lay Ministry Program. So lay ministry is definitely where I hang out most of the time. And by that I mean we actually offer classes throughout the year to inspire and instruct and enrich the ministry of the members of our church. And then we have this wonderful capstone program for people, lay people who feel a call to more pastoral ministry, yet they are remain lay people. And that's
right.
The Certified Lay Minister Program, which is being very successful.
And that's how you and I know each other, Judy. You sought me out to teach the history unit to the CLM class, the Certified Lay Ministry class. And later in the show, Judy, I'd love to talk with you about these lay ministry programs, which are really something that the United Methodist Church is very proud of.
Yes.
And something that, you know, me being the instructor on the history unit for the CLM class has been a real highlight of my year. It's really been a great interaction. I love the students. I love them coming down to my church, Historic St. George's, down in Old City, and, you know, really soaking in their Methodist heritage. So, Judy, thank you for that. And now, with respect to the Special General Conference just concluded in St. Louis. You were a delegate, is that right?
Well, yes. I was a delegate to the 2016 General Conference and sat there in awe when the vote was taken to actually have this way forward, to challenge the bishops, to take us forward. And the bishops came back with this concept of having a commission and then a special general conference to discuss the results of the commission report. So that's how I got to be there in February 2019. I was present in 2016.
So how does one become a delegate? Now, the 2016 meeting of the General Conference in Portland, Oregon, I was there, had a great time, saw you there. And that 2016 General Conference is a quadrennial, every four-year conference. And due to this issue that was being considered out in St. Louis, the Special General Conference was called just to address the issue of LGBTQI inclusion in the Methodist Church. And we're not going to really get into the politics of that today, but we just want to talk to Judy about her experiences as a delegate on the floor, you know, where all the action is going. And I'm listening to this on a live stream, listening to all 4 days of the Special General Conference.
Bless you.
With a listening party at my church, we watched the video that was live streamed, and it was an amazing event. It was a momentous event. Judy, now, how did you get elected to be a delegate to the 2016 General Conference?
Well, that takes place in 2015 at our annual conference. Every conference in the United Methodist Church all over the globe, and we certainly know now we are a global church, has an annual conference, and the responsibility 1 year before every 4 year or quadrennial general conference is to elect delegates. And the number of delegates is actually concluded by the general church based on members,
mm-hmm.
based on all of that kind of information. And Eastern Pennsylvania was allowed 4 clergy members and 4 lay members. And then, of course, we always elect alternates because we know that we're human,
mm-hmm.
and people sometimes need to not be present or leave the floor for a time. And I believe that I was called to this work many years ago because I started out as a jurisdictional delegate.
Mm-hmm.
That's the second conference we have every 4 years, and that's a whole geographic area, the Northeast jurisdiction for us. We meet and we do critical work to our geographic area, and the primary reason for that conference is to elect bishops.
Right, right.
I actually had a career. I was a professor at a community college, and so I couldn't take 2 weeks off in the middle of May to do general conference, so I was always deferred, and I was elected to jurisdictional conference. But, you know, I kind of am in that typical age group of United Methodist members. That means that I'm older than 50.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
So when I retired, when I was nominated, you have to be nominated by your colleagues in the annual conference.
Mm-hmm.
When I was nominated, I said, this I can do now that I'm retired, because it is 2 weeks that you need to be at the site of the general conference.
Right.
That first happened in 2012, and then again, I was nominated for 2016, and so people who were delegates at 2016 were put in place. You're a delegate from the time you're elected to the general conference until it's time to elect delegates for the next general conference.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that 2019, that delegation were called to St. Louis.
So I have to say, my touch point with the Northeast jurisdiction in the last year or so has been that last summer I attended the Eastern Pennsylvania Historic Commission's jurisdictional event for history and archives. And Pastor Mark Young and Joe DiPaolo were there hosting the Northeast jurisdiction,
mm-hmm.
All the history people, and it was just such a joy to be going to Long's Barn and to Barrett's Chapel and to Lovely Lane, you know, and see all of these United Methodist heritage sites, of which Historic St. George's, my church, is also one of the 13 Methodist heritage sites. So I got to know a lot of good people in the Northeast jurisdiction, and that goes from Pennsylvania to Maine, right?
Yes, it does. In fact, Baltimore, Washington to Maine.
Oh, okay. So Bishop
Baltimore,
Easterling is in the Northeast jurisdiction also.
Yes, that's right. And we even have West Virginia.
Okay.
We forget about that sometimes, but that's part of our jurisdiction, and then all the way up to the Canadian border.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get back to the special general conference in St. Louis. Judy, for the benefit of our audience, can you take a moment to tell us what was at stake at the St. Louis General Conference, the special general conference last week from February 23rd to the 26th? What was at stake there?
Many of us felt that the unity of our church was at stake.
Right, right.
And, of course, the decisions that were going to be made, at the time, in 2016, when the verbiage was being crafted, it was to discuss the United Methodist stance on human sexuality. And really, that meant that every paragraph in our Book of Discipline, and we are a disciplined denomination. We are a disciplined people.
Absolutely.
But the Book of Discipline had paragraphs inserted in 1972 when the only word to describe human sexuality other than heterosexual experiences was homosexual.
That's right. That's right.
So we knew that we were going to be, the commission that was appointed was going to look at every one of those paragraphs, and their charge was to bring back a plan, a path that would take us from the very, very divisive discussions that we've had over the past 35 years.
Right. It's you're talking about language that has been inserted into the Book of Discipline and adopted.
Yes.
Going back to 1972, when we had a much narrower conception of alternate expressions of human sexuality.
Absolutely.
Only homosexuality was identified back then, and now we have a whole spectrum from lesbian and gay to bisexual, transgender, intersex, and queer. So it's a different rainbow today of sexuality, and I think something that we're learning from the younger generation, from the millennials out there, is that people can be in different places on that spectrum of human sexuality, from heterosexual to transgender, perhaps, at different times in different places in your life. So, you know, I think we're, as a society, as a human race, we are learning more about human sexuality now in recent decades than we ever knew before. And so,
oh, absolutely, absolutely.
So, Judy, the could you describe what the way forward was? There was a commission that was created in 2016 by the Council of Bishops to address this issue. They evaluated a number of plans. They endorsed a plan, the One Church plan, that was going to govern different belief churches with different beliefs under one large tent. But that plan was not voted in at the Special General Conference last week. The traditional plan was voted in. And Judy, can you explain for our listening audience what the traditional plan did and why was it so controversial?
Well, let me just say that the One Church plan was endorsed by a great number of our bishops. We don't have a quantifiable number. That was never, but we have been told that the greatest number of our bishops did support that. And that plan was a plan where local churches would have a choice. You see, the whole discussion really wasn't about the definition of the spectrum of human sexuality. It was about the ordination of persons other than heterosexual,
right,
and about same-sex marriages in mm-hmm. our church, both of which have been prohibited by our discipline. So the One Church plan became the local church would make these decisions, pastors would make decisions, and
make decisions about whether or not to perform
whether or not to marry in the premises, mm-hmm. whether a pastor would conduct that ceremony, and then the ordination decisions would be left to annual conferences. The board of ministry and the executive session of our clergy. So that plan was supported, but only by 48% of the voting.
Mm-hmm.
And it passed, it didn't pass three votes. There were actually three times when it was put up for a vote. The first was a prioritization vote when we started doing our work on Sunday mm-hmm. of the conference. And then there was the first formal vote. And that, it was 53% to 47%. And then on the very last day, it came up again as a minority report, and it did not pass. It's a very narrow margin when you think about how close.
Yeah, you know, it's the votes were separated by like 120 or 130 votes out of 870 or 876. And so it's only like an 8% of the entire delegate. You know, the difference between the one church plan being defeated and the traditional plan being approved was only about 120 votes out of 870.
Yes.
Wow.
But you ask about the traditional plan.
Right.
The traditional plan, in the original report that came from the Special General Conference, these 33 folks who represented our global church. And you know, Mark, we have to keep reminding everyone, we are a global church.
Right. Absolutely.
That is one of the learnings that actually came out of this Special General Conference. Many of our members, particularly people who are newer to the United Methodist Church, had no idea how vast our membership spans, the geographic span. And so the way forward came back with two plans. This was in May of 2018, and it was the One Church plan, and then a plan that was called the Connectional plan, and it was kind of like three-tenths under one big umbrella kind of thing.
Right.
Three different books of discipline, and it was trying to please everyone, but it was so complicated that, you know, we have a Supreme Court in our church.
The Judicial Council.
And I give thanks to the early, early leaders of our church who crafted these divisions and this discipline so that we have these checks and balances. Well, the Judicial Council said, you know, this connectional plan is just too complicated. We are not going to rule on it. We don't think it could be actually implemented for many, many years, and it went on and on.
Hey, Judy.
Judy,
we're coming up on our first break, our first break is at 3:18. So let's pick this conversation up on the other side of the break. We're having a fascinating discussion with Judy Enninger about the Special General Conference in the United Methodist Church. You're on Faith to Faith with Pastor Mark here on WWDB 860 Talk Radio Philadelphia.
Historic St. George's United Methodist Church, a progressive and affirming Christian church, and a Philadelphia treasure for nearly 250 years. We are located at 235 North 4th Street in Old City, Philadelphia, and our Sunday worship service begins at 10 a.m. on Sunday mornings. Come join Pastor Mark Salvation and the congregation at Historic St. George's as we fight for social justice, as we address food insecurity in Philadelphia, and as we restore our bodies and minds through yoga practice. But most of all, come join Pastor Mark Salvation and the congregation at Historic St. George's as we live out Jesus' message of love and inclusion for all. Visit us online at www.historicstgeorges.org.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that, overall, you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't seen your lap in months. And even more stuff. But still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed. And they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs. And it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
My dad came to live with us last month, and you know, it's going pretty well.
I feel like I never have time for myself.
With him being around more, it really lets us catch up on things.
His memory isn't what it used to be.
We get up and we have coffee.
He usually wakes up at 4:30.
Then we go for a walk.
He needs lots of my attention.
I do need to keep an eye on his medications, though. That's important.
Sometimes I feel like a pharmacist.
I'd say John and the kids are adjusting. pretty well.
They honestly have no idea what I'm going through.
It can be a little challenging.
Help.
But so far, so good.
I could really use just a little help.
For those dealing with the daily struggles of caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community with experts and other caregivers for advice, tips, and support. Together, let's help each other better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
We're back on the air with Faith to Faith with Pastor Mark. Our guest today is Judy Enninger. She is a layperson extraordinaire in our Eastern Pennsylvania Annual Conference. And Judy was recently a delegate to the Special General Conference recently held in St. Louis, Missouri. And so on the other side of the break, Judy, we were talking about the plans. And you told us that the two plans endorsed by the Council of Bishops, the One Church Plan and the Connectional Conference Plan, both didn't make it. And we were going to start talking about the plan that did make it through, despite numerous constitutional challenges. We're going to talk about the traditional plan, but first, I did want to mention one thing that we talked about during the first segment, and that is the number of delegates that went to the Special General Conference from Eastern Pennsylvania, which is where we are situated, were 8 delegates. Was that right, Judy?
Yes. 4 clergy and 4 lay.
And so among the delegates, Pastor Joe DiPaolo, who we know very well, he's been on this show, Pastor Joe DiPaolo is a good friend to Historic St. George's, and Jeff Raffoff, who is someone we know through the annual conference, a well-respected clergy person from a Westlawn United Methodist Church, Pastor Lydia Munoz from Church of the Open Door down in Kensington, a Spanish Latin American service down there in Mushroom Country in Kensington. So all of the and Clarita Crawl, who's a friend of ours.
Oh, don't forget, Mark, our head of our delegation, District Superintendent, the Reverend Dawn Taylor Storm.
Absolutely.
That's the 4th clergy.
And she's very well known to us. And just such a fantastic District Superintendent, Dawn Taylor Storm. She has really been a friend to Historic St. George's in some recent issues that we've had in the past that needed her guidance and direction. And so Dawn Taylor Storm was there, much loved clergy person here in Eastern Pennsylvania. So, you know, when we talk about the delegates and talk about the people who are going to Special General Conference and to General Conference, these are all our friends. These are all people who we work with, we do ministry with every day. And so our 8 delegates on the lay side and the clergy side really represented our interests. And they did so very, very well. And Judy, I want to thank you for being part of that 8, that crew of delegates to the Special General Conference, because it sounds like you did a great job.
And my responsibility with every privilege, of course, and that's how I took it, a great responsibility. The other lay delegates were Jane Bonner.
Oh, yes.
And we had, this is a little interesting, 4 women were the lay people. And that was not by design, and that was not by the vote. Our 4th delegate is Crystal Johnson from St. Daniel's in Chester. And what happened between 2016 and 2019 is we had 2 young men, actually young men, part of our delegation, and one actually has become clergy, so was not able to be our alternate anymore.
Okay.
And the other moved out of the jurisdiction and felt it was not appropriate for him to stay with the delegation because he moved to the West.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, in our polity, we had these alternates, so they moved up. And so it was 4 women who were the lay people. But, we took that on and did what we were called to do.
Yes, and so we were starting to talk about the plan that was voted in by a majority, 52-53% of the delegates at St. Louis, and the traditional plan was kind of a dark horse. I think many people, even on the side that the traditional plan emanates from, are some of them were surprised as we were. But Judy, can you pack that? Go ahead, Judy.
As the report came to us in early 2018, as it came to us, it was explained that the traditional plan really wasn't something that the commission looked at. That's where we are. The traditional plan was where we are, and the Way Forward Commission was to take us from the traditional plan to a place where we would could maintain our unity and also solve the differences that had been keeping us from doing some ministry over the past years, really.
Right. Right.
But the traditional plan, it was deemed then during the summer that it should be presented. And there were some modifications to the standing book of discipline. Let me just say that the best definition of the traditional plan is this. As it was presented, it affirms the current language in the Book of Discipline. That's
right.
The language that stood at 2016, mm-hmm. which bans self-avowed and practicing homosexual clergy and the blessing of same-gender unions and marriages with, this is a little addition, with strict enforcement of these bans.
Right.
And then it inserted these, also, homosexuality is considered contrary to Christian teaching. Marriage is only between a man and a woman. That's the essence of the traditional plan. And then there are some other caveats in the traditional plan that explain some of the difficulties that clergy could actually find themselves in if indeed they disobeyed the discipline as it's now put forward and as it may be inserted after April, when the Judicial Council will take a look at the plan that passed and rule if it is indeed constitutional.
Now let me just grab onto one of the things you just said, Judy, about the heightened accountability. So me, yes. As a licensed local pastor, I've got sacramental authority in my home church, Historic St. George's. And if a gay couple came to St. George's and wanted to be married there and wanted to be married by me, if I were to perform that gay wedding, same-sex wedding at St. George's, I would be in violation of the Book of Discipline, as it stands now, and if the traditional plan passes, I mean, if it passes constitutional muster, then, you know, that the situation I would be in as a clergy person would be the first time under the traditional plan, I'm suspended without pay for a year. And the second violation, if I did a second gay wedding and it was found out, second same-sex wedding, the penalty is complete. You have to give back back your credentials. I would have to give back my credentials. And Judy, can you tell us what the debate was like over that particular issue of heightened enforcement? Because I would imagine that the clergy delegates were pretty hot to debate that.
There were the words punitive were used, obviously, to describe them. Harsh was, you know, over and over, but punitive, punishment. And not extending any grace or mercy.
Right.
Those are the kinds of things that we heard at the mic. Of course, the folks who supported the traditional plan, and you have to understand with the vote the way it was, that was, you know, this was almost a 50-50. It's a 48-53 kind of situation.
Right.
You heard equal speech, and we follow Robert's rules, so there were three speeches for and three against. And what we heard supporting this is that we have a discipline, we must support it, and then the belief that this behavior, the kinds of things that we were talking about, same-sex weddings and so forth, should not be approved in our in our church.
Right,
and
right.
Those kinds of things went forward. But one of the interesting things is a little piece is in the traditional plan. Bishops and annual conferences must certify that they would uphold, enforce, and maintain the discipline standards on marriage and ordination.
Right.
That's a new sentence. That's totally new territory
mm-hmm.
for us. And there was a lot of debate about that clause, simply because what does it mean to certify? We've
right.
never done that. Where's the trust when that was one of the discussions?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the trust when one must certify? And how do you certify an annual conference?
Right. Right. And there were a lot of difficulties. And you know, as I listened to it and heard that, you know, the Judicial Council was asked for a declaratory judgment, I think it was on late day two or early day three. And they came back 24 hours later with, an analysis that said that 9 of the provisions of the traditional plan, including provisions about episcopal accountability, and about the accountability of boards of ordained ministry and district committees on ordained ministry, you know, booms and decoms. So the Judicial Council came back with a number of unconstitutional rulings saying that the traditional plan is flawed. So, Judy, what happens? I understand that there's a Judicial Council meeting in April sometime to consider.
April 23 through 25. So this will be a time for another prayer vigil in our church.
Right. And where is the Judicial Council meeting taking place?
My mind is a blank about that right
now. I think I heard it was in Europe, actually. Maybe in Belgium.
It may be, and we can certainly find that out. But the Judicial Council in that April meeting will look at the traditional plan in its entirety,
mm-hmm.
and they will rule on the constitutionality of this one part of the traditional plan that did pass in a minority report version, and that's this whole question of disaffiliation.
Right. Then tell us about that.
Well, disaffiliation means exactly that. Churches could leave the denomination. That original piece of legislation was deemed questionable in terms of constitutionality, so it was amended with a minority report.
Right.
And it does indeed include in that piece that it talks about the fees that a church would have to pay and so forth, and then it does say that they could leave with their buildings.
Now, that's an innovation. You know, as we've talked about this on the show a couple of times, but there is such a thing called the Trust Clause,
absolutely.
Which has bound this church together. It's one of the things that we all have in common. Every single church belongs to the denomination or to the annual conference. It doesn't belong to the congregation. So going all the way back to John Wesley, you know, every church is implied or required to have a copy of the Trust Clause inserted in their title deed. And the Trust Clause says that upon alienation of the congregation, if the congregation were to leave the church, the building reverts back to its original owner, which is the denomination. And so that was waived, as I understand it, in the traditional plan, such that if a local church wanted to leave at the end of the day, and the congregation and the pastor, leave, and the annual conference, says goodbye, that church building used to go back to the denomination, and now that church that leaves could take the building with it. How are people responding to that back in Eastern Pennsylvania, Judy?
Now, honestly, Mark, I have had limited contact because I've been a snowbird until Friday.
Oh, right. You've been in Florida.
So I can tell you more about what the people in Florida were saying than I can. But I have spoken to folks here in Eastern Pennsylvania, and there's great concern. There's great concern about that.
Right.
But we need to wait to see what the Judicial Council says. And they're going to rule on, can this whole traditional plan be approved as a bundle, or can certain elements of it be taken out and be said to be unconstitutional and so forth.
Right.
But this is what I am hearing. I hear a sense of this. While this provision, if it would pass, I believe that many of our churches are going to say, we're staying because we believe that this issue is not said and done, that God's will, we may have a progressive revelation and
right.
see a greater, and so that's really what I'm hearing. I am not hearing we're going to leave, we're going to pack up, I'm not hearing that. I believe perhaps that there will be individuals, and sadly, as a lay person who leads lay ministry, certified lay ministry, I have had persons who have told me, I am planning to do this.
Right.
I'm in a way, but I am planning to leave. But that's not a church leaving with its buildings. I think that's probably, for me, that is one of the most important parts of this plan. And should that pass, that really changes hundreds of years of history.
Right. Absolutely.
Tradition. And well, we're people of history and tradition, so I have great concern about that.
Yeah, amen to that, people of history and tradition. That describes historic St. George's quite well. So Judy, I want to thank you for being our guest. Can I impose upon you to perhaps stick around for the third segment of the show? I'd really like to get to talk about certified lay ministry. I think there are many people in our listening audience who are lay people now who want to add to their commitment to God and do God's work. So can we talk about...
Of course, my dear friend.
Thank you.
You are being very kind, and of course I will.
Okay, so we're coming into our second break. You're listening to Faith with Pastor Mark on WWDB 860 AM Talk Radio Philadelphia. Join us for the journey.
Historic St. George's United Methodist Church, a progressive and affirming Christian church, and a Philadelphia treasure for nearly 250 years. We are located at 235 North 4th Street in Old City, Philadelphia, and our Sunday worship service begins at 10 a.m. on Sunday mornings. Come join Pastor Mark Salvation and the congregation at Historic St. George's as we fight for social justice, as we address food insecurity in Philadelphia, and as we restore our bodies and minds through yoga practice. But most of all, come join Pastor Mark Salvation and the congregation at Historic St. George's as we live out Jesus' message of love and inclusion for all. Visit us online at www.historicstgeorges.org.
At any given moment, somewhere in America, a baby is taking a first step, a developmental milestone. But for too many parents, a baby's first steps aren't just a milestone, they're a miracle. These are the parents of babies who were born prematurely or with birth defects. It's a crisis affecting more than 500,000 babies in the United States each year. You can help them by joining volunteers like you who walk in March for Babies. The money you raise funds research and local programs that help babies overcome the challenges of premature birth and birth defects. Together, our steps make stronger, healthier babies a reality for thousands of families. Sign up today at marchforbabies.org to take the steps that help make milestones and even miracles possible. Who will you march for?
Introducing the YMCA. What, you already know the why? Or so you think. Sure, you know the why for a swim, a workout, even a game of hoops. But did you know we're more than that? We're a cause. When you take your jump shot at the Y, someone else is getting job training. Take a cardio class while kids are in an after-school enrichment program. Practice your downward-facing dog as a teen practices her leadership skills. That's the Y. We work with people no matter their age, income, or background, and give them the opportunity to learn, grow, and thrive, all with one simple goal in mind, to strengthen our community. And we've got so much more that does just that. So while you might think of the Y as that place for lifting weights, we're also about lifting entire communities. Introducing the Y. We're so much more than a place. We're a cause. Visit ymca.net/more.
We're back on the air with Faith to Faith with Pastor Mark on WWDB 860 AM. We're having a great conversation with our dear friend Judy Enninger, who was recently a delegate to St. Louis, where the Special General Conference of the United Methodist Church took place. So, Judy, before we turn to a discussion about the Certified Lay Minister Program here in Eastern Pennsylvania, let me just ask you one closing question on the discussion about St. Louis, and that is, what are you telling churches to do now? A church like mine, a church like any number of United Methodist congregations around Eastern Pennsylvania, we've got about 450, 470 churches in Eastern Pennsylvania. And, you know, Judy, when churches come to you and say, what do we do now in light of the traditional plan coming down the road? What do we do now in the wake of St. Louis? What do you tell them?
Well, whatever ministries you were doing before, continue doing them with vigor. Nothing has changed at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We are waiting for these decisions, but right now everyone should understand that the United Methodist Church continues to want to be involved with all people and to bring them into a relationship with Jesus Christ. Everyone, heterosexual, GLBTQIA+, are persons of sacred worth,
mm-hmm.
and created in the image of God. And that's where we were before we went into the General Conference, and that's how we came out. Everyone is welcome to participate in the life of our churches,
mm-hmm.
and continue on their spiritual journey. So we need to keep on doing what we have been doing, and as I say, with more fervor and vigor.
Well, that's great, Judy, and thanks for putting that coda on our discussion about the way forward. I know a lot of people in my congregation are thinking long and hard about this issue, and it's going to be with us for a while. We've had about 5 shows in a row about this very topic, and I think it's time that we start turning to other things, because there are other things going on in the United Methodist Church today. And one of the things that where Judy and I overlap is the Certified Lay Minister Program here in Eastern Pennsylvania, and it has been, by all measures, a resounding success, thanks in large part to the great work that Judy Enninger has done as the director of the CLM Certified Lay Minister Program. And Judy, can you, let's say somebody comes up to you and says, you know, I'm a lay person, but I'd really like to get more involved in the church. I'd really like to, do much more than just reading the scripture, but preaching it and loving the congregation and doing pastoral care. Can you tell us, Judy, what's the CLM program about?
Well, we need to go back. It's another one of those history and tradition things.
Mm-hmm.
We need to go back to the work of our forefathers, Francis Asbury and all those preachers,
right,
who rode circuits. The persons who took care of the small churches, parishes that were established between the time that the circuit rider could get there, were lay people.
Right.
So in the very beginning, they were called exhorters. They were kind of encouragers,
mm-hmm.
keeping people, you know, faith up and so forth. And then we gained all kinds of education in our denomination and so forth. In the 1940s, there was, and again, this goes back to our Book of Discipline, the Methodist Church at that time had a specific ministry called the Lay Speaker Ministry, where lay people would receive training,
mm-hmm.
so that they could be adequately prepared to fill in for the pastor, and occasionally even go to another church if called upon for a special fill-in kind of pulpit supply or whatever we'd like to call it, experience.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that grew and grew and grew, and it was called the Lay Speaker Ministry, and it involved so much more than lay speaking, because by the 1970s, 80s, 90s, lay people were doing most of the caring ministry in a congregation.
Right, sure.
Doing outreach. They were running food banks and soup kitchens and so forth, and lay people were the leaders of the congregation in partnership with a pastor.
And certainly,
so it took until 2012 for the General Conference to actually change the name of this laity training program that was established way back in the 1940s and then kept growing and so forth, and it became the Lay Servant Ministry Program.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Eastern Pennsylvania is we're thought to be, you know, in the birthplace of American Methodism, and that's absolutely true, and we're so thrilled to be part of that.
Oh yes.
Well, we're a little avant-garde. We're not all still back in the historical time period, and being avant-garde, Eastern Pennsylvania, long before the General Church passed this name of Lay Servant Ministry for the Laity Training Program, we started in the late 90s with the permission of our annual conference by vote to call our program Christ Servant Ministry, the Laity Training Program for Laity in the Eastern Pennsylvania Conference. Isn't that great?
That's great.
We know who we serve. We're servants of Christ, and that's how. And it included always three components: caring, leading, and speaking.
Mm-hmm.
So some persons are involved in caring ministries. They take those courses and they become certified as a Christ servant minister in caring or speaking or leading. And some of us said, well, I want all three.
Right.
I think I need all three. In 2004, the General Conference actually did see a need to actually prepare a tier of seasoned lay people who would actually be able to take, under the direction of an ordained elder, take charge of a small parish that could not take on a licensed or ordained pastor, but still wanted to stay together.
Right.
And so the Certified Lay Minister Program was built on top of this lay speaking program. And then in 2012, it became Lay Servant Ministries in our General Church and in our discipline with these certified lay ministers. It's a one-year curriculum, and it's quite rigorous. It by no means is as involved as gaining a licensed local pastor license or certificate, or is it anywhere near the seminary? I know you're in seminary. You know that really.
Yeah.
It's not like that. It is high level training for laity.
Yes, and you know, I, as Judy mentioned, I'm still finishing my seminary experience. After this semester, I'll have three classes left, 9 credits, and really looking forward to graduating in December of this year. And so, Judy, if somebody is accepted into the Certified Lay Minister Program, you said it's a rigorous training. Can you tell us a little bit about you know, what topics are covered, how many hours, and what kind of experience are these candidates having?
I want to make sure that our listeners understand that the first step is to become a Christ servant minister in our conference. If you're in one of the neighboring conferences, they're going to call it lay servant. And so that involves some general education requirements to be a servant minister,
mm-hmm.
As a lay person. And in Eastern Pennsylvania, we say that you need to have 2 years of that experience before you should consider this higher level capstone program called the Certified Lay Minister.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, right now, we have 11 people who are prepared to start the new program. They'll be coming to see you in September.
Oh, great. Looking forward to
it. And we have 8 persons who will be graduating. So we're putting out between 8 and 12 certified lay ministers each year. Some of them actually are assigned to a small congregation.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them are taking up the responsibilities of those persons who used to be called associate pastors.
Right.
Some churches can't afford to have a second ordained pastor, so the certified lay minister is taking on those responsibilities. It's an exciting thing to see that we are actually still staffing our churches, but with persons who have a different kind of education, and they all have lots of in-the-pew member experience.
Right, right. And you know, it is such a great service to the denomination to have these troops available to go in where, you know, right now, many of my licensed local pastor friends, and I'm a licensed local pastor, we sometimes have two and three different charges under one licensed local pastor. And, you know, from what my friends in seminary tell me who have 2 and 3 point charges, you know, they can barely make it to their three churches or two churches or one church every Sunday and to be prepared. But to be prepared for three churches at the same time on a Sunday morning and each of the churches being, you know, 5, 10, 15 members, you know, it's a way to supplement the clergy in this annual conference.
And clearly it takes us back to the days of the circuit riders, when John Wesley, the founder of Methodism, said, you know, well, let's train up some lay people, but they need to be trained properly.
Right.
And so adamant about quality of education and also character. You know, you wrote that wonderful little pamphlet about the character of a Methodist.
Mm-hmm.
So those are still the qualities we are looking for. But yes, the certified lay minister is an extension, extending the ministry in the community and certainly to these congregations in partnership with an ordained clergy. Now, the kinds of things that certified lay ministers study, the first thing is the call and covenant of ministry.
Right. Very important.
So we talk about call. Where are you called? How are you called? Have you defined your call? We do a lot of talking about spiritual gifts, but the emphasis is also on covenant. The fact that if you enter into an assignment with a small congregation, it will be after a covenant has been established between the certified lay minister, the supervising pastor, and the congregation. So it's a great deal of time about how covenants came about,
right,
how they're written. Then we have a whole section, probably the longest module. This curriculum is divided into four modules. It's called the practice of ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that involves preaching. It involves pastoral care. It involves every aspect of developing a worship service. The two things that certified lay ministers are unable to do, they are not licensed and not professional ordained pastors, so they don't have sacramental authority.
Right.
So while they can assist with a baptism, they would need to do that. A licensed or ordained pastor would do that with the assistance of the certified lay minister. Many certified lay ministers have persons in their small churches or in their regular membership churches, and they do things like conduct the classes pre-baptism.
Mm-hmm.
They really just can't perform the sacrament ritual. The other thing is, of course, Holy Communion.
Right.
There is no sacramental authority, but we're finding these certified lay ministers that are in congregations, they have a pastor who has sacramental authority and supervision of their ministry, and they work this out so that indeed communion elements are consecrated, they're blessed, and then they're distributed
mm-hmm.
to those who are unable to be in the larger congregation and so forth.
Right.
Yep. That's, and then of course, we need to talk about history, doctrine, and polity. And that's your bailiwick, and we are ever so grateful that you allow us and do that with such grace. And of course, you know, one of the things that we've continued in that module is an experience with Mother Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church, which is just, you know, your partner in ministry.
Absolutely.
We walk across Independence, we walk right across the park and go over there, and it's a wonderful relationship that we have. And that's deep, that's really one of the deepest parts of our history that we need as American Methodists to understand. And then, of course, we have to study administration. So we have a whole module.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these classes are 10 hours in length. Some are actually 14, 15 hours in length. That practice of ministry takes a little longer. But we look at the Book of Discipline. We help these certified lay ministers understand the governance of the United Methodist Church.
Right.
And then the governance that falls down to a local congregation. They have homework, they have assignments, they do a marvelous job. Everyone is required to take a special class that's called Changing Racism.
Mm-hmm.
It covers so much more than racism. It covers, it's done by a professional group. Everyone who enters any level of ministry in our conference is required to take this class. I think every leader should take it.
Yes, I've taken it, and it's really a great class. But Judy, we're going to have to put a stake in it there. If somebody is interested, as a layperson, interested in getting more involved and seeking out this certified lay ministry program, how can people get in touch with you?
Well, there are two ways. The conference has a great website, and it's our initials, EPAUMC,
mm-hmm.
okay, and .org. It's our conference website, and there's a whole section on lay ministry there under resources, under ministries, and then they're under resources as well. But I'll give everyone another website, and that is Christ Servant Ministries. All one word, .net, ChristServantMinistries.net, and there every aspect of the laity training program from the basic course. Oh, my.
You know, Judy, I think we're going to have to leave it there. My producer is giving me the cut signal. So I want to thank you for showing us the way on Certified Lay Ministry and also talking with us about the Special General Conference. Our guest has been Judy Enninger. She is a superb lay leader in the Eastern Pennsylvania Annual Conference. And we're going to sign off today. You're listening to Faith to Faith with Pastor Mark on WWDB 860 AM Talk Radio Philadelphia. Join us for the journey.
I make